Welcome to the Level Playing Field podcast with your host, David Yu, the platform where aviation and finances meet. Each week, David will be interviewing guests from all different careers in aviation who can help us explore how each career impacts a family's personal finances and lifestyle. Now, here's your host, David Yu.
Welcome, I'm David Yu, Certified Financial Planner Practitioner and host of the Level Playing Field podcast. This week, I interviewed J. Bruce Camino. He's the owner of an architecture and project management firm here in Southern California. Join me as he talks about how he is able to combine his love for aviation and architecture with his award-winning Piper Comanche 260B. We also explore his philanthropic side and how he's able to use his plane to help others in need. J. Bruce Camino, the flying architect, welcome to the Level Playing Field podcast.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for having me. And just a little, quick intro. J. Bruce over here, he is also known as the flying architect. He's the principal architect over at Development One Incorporated in Santa Ana. And let's see, so they do architecture and project management firm that works on projects in both the public and private sectors. So your clients, I believe, include NASA, JPL, the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, U.S. Department of Defense. I think I heard the Air Force,
yes,
which is part of the department, and Qantas and John Wayne Airport. So pretty, quite an impressive resume over there. And also, one thing I thought was really cool about you and what's really unique is that you're a pilot as well. And so you're a pilot that flies the Piper Comanche 260B, and you use it for work as well as, obviously for pleasure and philanthropic purposes as well.
Yes.
Cool. Well, really glad to have you here. And just to get started, tell us about a little bit about yourself. Who's J. Bruce Camino?
Yeah, certainly be happy to do that. As you shared, thanks for the kind introduction. I've been in business now for about 30 years. Attended the University of Washington up in Seattle. I got my bachelor's and master's from there, and it's an institution that certainly to this day continues to serve me well. Real proud of my colors, as you can see.
Color. And I believe today's a special day of yours?
Yes, it's my birthday, of course.
And, okay.
Certainly celebrating here with you, and the color of my airplane is purple as well, so you can see I honor my alma mater pretty well.
Yeah, I don't know. I think cardinal and gold might be a better color.
We could take that under a separate forum, I think. So we lived in Seattle for about 7 years and then moved down south. I was born here in the Bay Area, so naturally it made sense for me to move back home. I established here in Orange County, California. 1989 is when I started Development One here in California. Eventually, one of the things that happened was that I was trying to find what I was really passionate about. And I kept on gravitating to my passion, which is aviation. And somehow I wanted to find a way that I could be able to blend my passion as a pilot with my profession as an architect. To make a long story short, because the majority of my projects are in the aviation aerospace area, I've naturally been able to blend both in a very, very smooth way. So, as you mentioned earlier, one of my clients is NASA. It had reserved for a space of Flight Armstrong, NASA Armstrong Flight Research Center. From there, I'm actually flying in. I even land the same runway the space shuttle land on.
So, oh, wow. Really?
Yes. And it's really a match made in heaven. I've been their architect for the last 18 years, and I continue to do so, and I continue to be as passionate as I was from the very first day that I started doing work there.
Nice, nice. That's really cool. Well, let's take us back then. Take us back to, when did you figure out that you were passionate about aviation?
Yeah, it takes me back to when I was 6 years old, and I never forget that day that my sister and I got up in the middle of the night to watch the first spacewalk from the Gemini capsule that was being commanded by Edward White and James McDivitt. And I remember being enthralled watching them doing the spacewalk. And I promised myself that one day I'd work for NASA. And so my fascination with aviation was something that stayed with me
for
many, many years. And One day I just got tired of wanting it.
Mm-hmm.
I went down to the airport and I asked them, what does it take to become a pilot?
Okay.
And so when I was there, that was my first flight back.
Was that before college or was that after or during college?
I had already graduated from the University of Washington. I was already a licensed architect.
Okay.
And so the thought of me waiting so long was something that always bothered me. And that day was something clicked in my mind and I decided, you know, I'm tired of wanting it. And mm-hmm. sometimes you just got to explore it and just got to investigate what it is. A lot of people fail in their goals just due to pure ignorance.
Yeah.
They just don't know. I just did not have the knowledge and, you know, necessary. Well, I came to find out that it was very possible.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I didn't have much money at that time, I was able to pull it off. Here I am 30 years later with a long history and career in aviation. I've been able to combine it with my profession as an architect.
That's awesome. That's really great. That's right. I think we kind of walk like, not like a complete, like exact paths, but I just started, you know, I've always been interested in aviation. I don't know, ever since I was little, you know, you know, always looking up in the skies, always like, you know, going up in the planes. And finally, obviously, like I already have an established career and everything. And yeah, in the back of my mind, I kind of wish I did it earlier. But it's better late than never. But I started.
I think that probably waiting makes you appreciate it even more, I think.
That's true. But yeah, I started flight school. You know, so I started the courses on my PPL. So I got like about 6 hours in now on the Piper Cherokee. So, you know, just doing it, you know, 3 days a week. And it's been a great learning process. And it's been so much fun.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, kind of wish I did it earlier. And I can't believe I waited so long to do this. But you are right, though. You do tend to appreciate it a lot more.
Yeah, you will see your quality of life goes up even more as you do it. The closer you get to becoming licensed, you will see a big jump. And I mean, I can't see the quality of my last 30 years wouldn't be the same without my pilot's license.
So, oh, I bet.
Congratulations on getting your... Jumping in and get your pilot's license.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. So tell us about that journey. Just briefly, just go through, like, how long did it take you to get your private pilot's license? Do you have your instrument rating? Like,
yes.
What was that process like? And tell us about, let's dive into the financials a little bit. So the cost might be a little bit different with inflation. Yeah, you know, just depending on how long ago that was, you know, not that you're old.
Yeah. Well, there's different ways to look at it. At the time, you know, I was just getting started in my life, really, you know, recently out of college, a recently licensed architect, and I really didn't have money at all. When I decided to go to the airport, I did not know, you know, I walked into three schools there at Fullerton Airport is where I got my private.
Fullerton. Okay.
And I walked in the first school and I was a little nervous, a little red in my face, and I was thinking, they're going to laugh at me. And I walked in and I said, hello, I'm just finding out, what does it take? Become a pilot's license. And three people looked at me and one of them said, here, let me show you around.
Okay.
And he took me under his wing and he showed me around and he told me what was involved and to expect. He showed me one of the airplanes. And like that, I went to three different schools and they all gave me their spiel. And the one that I felt most comfortable with, they gave me a demo flight that day.
Okay.
So I went on my demo flight and then they said, you know, I thought that maybe you had to pay $5,000-$10,000 right there on the spot. And it doesn't work that way. You pay as you go. In my case, I would put $500 in the account.
Mm-hmm.
And when that was used up, then I would replenish it again. And I think that overall, at the time, I think it worked out to be about $3,000.
Okay.
Today, I think it's closer to about $6,000 to $9,000, depending on what school you go to. There's independent flight instructors that will do it for a lot less. The type of aircraft that you use will make a difference if you do fly a two-seater compared to four-seater.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on what kind of equipment. My recommendations go with a smaller aircraft to when you just get started. It's a private pilot's license. You want to get that first rating out of the way, first license, because that license really is a permit to learn how to become an instrument rated pilot. I tell people, if you're not committed to become an instrument rated, don't do it because it'll be a waste of money.
Yeah.
If anybody watching this video, I can leave them with something very, very important. It's something that the flight instructors don't, unfortunately, do not talk about much. And it is that it's important to ask the student, what is your mission?
Yeah.
You've got to figure out what your mission is in aviation. And so for me, my mission was that I wanted to use it for work and I wanted to use it for philanthropic purposes. And to this day, I still do use it that way. You know, I use it more for business. Mm-hmm. And I'm able to fly to remote sites where my projects are located. Like at NASA, for example, you know, I land the same runway space shuttle used to land on.
Yeah.
There often, and you need a special permit to land in there, but I'm qualified to do that.
Yeah.
So the instrument rating allows you to spread your wings, pun intended, mm-hmm. be able to go further.
Yeah.
Be able not only have more fun, but be able to, let's say, make more impact with that skill set as a pilot.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I totally agree with you. Let's see, just growing. Well, just, you know, when you started your career, you were going through the cost of paying for the rentals and for the instructors, things like that.
Yeah.
Was it hard to make those payments? You know, was it manageable? And how were you able to kind of make it manageable and just get through all that?
Yeah. I wish I could tell you a formula that it worked out like this or where I got the money. But as I went along, I honestly, all I did was draw $500 in the account. And when that was used, then I would drop a little bit more. I would save my money. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I didn't have very much money, but certainly I was very passionate of aviation. So that's what carried me. I figured it out. There were some times where really I did not have enough money. And so I had to wait till I had a little bit more saved up to put more money on it. And it, you know, it took me almost a year to get my private pilot's license. If you have the money, you can have it as soon as 3 months. Mm-hmm. You can have it really quick. But it was as I was going along, and it took me much longer to get my private pilot's license. Honestly, when you're passionate about something, it'll work itself out.
Yeah,
that is what I firmly believe. You know, there's other ways to do it. You can finance it. You know, you can obviously ask for a loan. You could join the Air Force. That mm-hmm. is another way to do it. But honestly, I think that if you're passionate about it, you will find a way.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's great. I guess what made you decide to become an architect?
Yeah.
Do you regret or have you ever wanted to, let's say, go to the airlines instead of being an architect?
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's our goal, right, of many people that are in aviation.
It is of a lot of people. But one of the things that I did is that my father was a Korean War combat veteran.
Okay.
He earned 2 Purple Hearts in the Korean War, the Bronze Star. So he was a very decorated military man. Naturally, it made sense for me to follow in his footsteps. But, you know, we were just recently out of the Vietnam conflict. And the Vietnam conflict was very different than World War II in Korea. And my dad discouraged me to going that route. I really thought that I would fly Navy.
Okay.
And land in aircraft carriers and all. And a fraternity brother of mine did go that route. And while he went into the Navy after undergraduate degree, I went into grad school.
Okay.
And at the end of my grad school, that was 3 years after we graduated with our undergrad, I sent them a letter and I asked them, I had this bug about going that route and I was wondering what he thought about it.
Yeah.
I remember him writing me a very, very sincere, special letter. And he said, "Jay Bruce, I've seen you as an architect. I've seen what you can do. I've seen how good you are. My recommendation is that you finish up as an architect, follow that path, and get your private pilot's license. And somehow, something will work out where you'll be able to combine it." And I'll never forget that advice he gave me. To this day, I thank him for that advice because it was the best advice anybody could have given me. He was very honest with me. Yes, landing aircraft carriers would have been fun and all that. He did it. He became top. He got burnt out. And to this day, he doesn't fly anymore.
Oh, really?
Done that. He went into real estate, does not fly. And, you know, so he lost that passion for it.
Yeah.
And so in my case, it's the opposite. I am more passionate today than I would have been, I think, that if I would have landed in aircraft carriers.
Yeah.
And I'm able to use it in many different ways. Because I'm an architect, I am doing what I love as a profession. I'm a very good architect, you know, mm-hmm. and I'm doing some work that is very impactful. The work, the design work that I do makes huge impact in this world. For example, some of the work that we do for NASA, granted, we're just a small speck of what NASA does, okay? Mm-hmm. But it's impactful. People that use the facilities that we work on are having to communicate with a space station, okay? Astronauts, you know, when the space shuttle was active, some of the facilities that we design are involved with those missions. I mean, I could go down the list of all these projects we've done that are part of the missions that NASA works on. We've made impact, as hopefully some of the product of the results of the testing and all of the experiments and studies that have happened in all of these facilities, I've been a part of, and hopefully it'll make, all of that will make impact in this world.
Yeah.
So we're really proud of what we do here at my company.
Yeah.
Because our work does make impact in the built environment.
Okay.
Certainly, having been NASA's architect for the last 18 years, it's something to be feel proud of.
Oh, yeah.
Development One. Not only me, but one of our core values is purpose-driven, to be purpose-driven. Here at Development One, we want our employees to be purpose-driven. They want to, them to find purpose here at Development One. And that is one of the ways to do that.
Mm-hmm.
The design work is contributing to the impact they make in this world.
Yeah.
I don't take the credit for all of it. To be honest with you, we all do it. Everybody here in the firm deserves credit because without them, I couldn't do my job and vice versa.
Yeah.
We all compliment each other in a real beautiful way. So it really is really, really cool.
Yeah.
From that perspective.
Now, as a firm, I know you mentioned that you guys do work in the private sector as well as the public sector. Is it mostly the public sector that you guys are focusing on, or is it, you know?
Yeah, we're heavy leveraged in the public sector. However, the private sector that we're involved in, for example, involves, for example, Qantas. Mm-hmm. You know, we the latest hangar for Qantas, the biggest hangar at LAX for the A380 that houses the A380.
That's pretty impressive. I think I saw pictures of that on your website. And it was
you can see it on your takeoff. You know, you can see it off the left-hand side as you're taking off into the ocean. Mm-hmm. You can see it's just huge hangar there off the inside. So clients like that, Lockheed Martin, so Boeing, some of these aerospace companies that we work with, certainly part of our brand of what we do here at Development One in the aerospace aviation arenas.
No problem.
The public sector is still everything from NASA, JPL, federal government agencies, to down to city agencies. Like, for example, we just completed the design of the terminal building at Fulton Airport.
Oh, okay.
And it is one that's going to start. Going to construction should be complete by the end of next year.
Yeah.
We're very excited about that. It's a gem of a building. It's really going to be a real high-profile project here in the County of Orange.
Mm-hmm.
Very excited about that project.
Wow, that's impressive. What I don't know a whole lot about architecture and, you know, buildings and stuff like that. Like, what goes into, like, let's say building the terminal building at Fullerton Airport?
Yeah.
Like, you know, without going into, like, too much specifics, but
sure.
How long does it take? Like, what, you know, actually goes into that.
Yeah.
You know, from beginning to end.
And it's truly an exciting, exciting type project because if you think about it, really, a terminal building is the gateway of travel into another city, another region, another area of the country, another state.
Mm-hmm.
We are very excited about this project at Fulton Airport because truly it is the gateway of not only the city of Fullerton, but the gateway to the County of Orange in California. Remember, Disneyland is here in Anaheim, which is only 10, 15 minutes from Fulton Airport. A lot of people choose to fly into Fulton Airport in their private aircraft,
mm-hmm.
and then there be able to go to the entertainment areas here in Orange County. And so, of course, if you were flying a commercial aircraft, be flying to John Wayne Airport. But a lot of people like to avoid that, especially if you're flying in a private plane. So really, this serves not only as a gateway to the different areas you fly into, but also the trend today is that these facilities should be designed as a destination.
Okay.
So many people are spending a lot of time in these terminal buildings because they got to be there early, because it'll take a while to get their luggage, because they're waiting for their connection to the next flight.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, there's so many reasons that people are spending a lot of time in terminal buildings. So terminal buildings today are being designed as a destination. You know, perfect example, if you haven't heard about this, you know, the TWA terminal in New York.
I think I saw something about that.
It's one of the most beautiful buildings designed in an airport type environment, the TWA terminal. Yet it outgrew its capacity and it was mothballed. And since it's really a historic building, they were not going to demolish it. So they turned it into a hotel.
Okay. Oh, wow. Okay.
And within the last 3 months, it just opened up to the public and people can go there and stay at this hotel. And I can't wait to do that. I'll tell you. Something we studied at school, this beautiful building that actually looks like a spaceship. Yeah. Just a gorgeous thing. You know, it looks like a stealth bomber, truly.
Yeah.
It is just a magnificent building. And inside, it's decorated in the ways of the 60s. So yeah. It takes you in time as if you were living in the 60s. So a lot of people now are traveling to JFK Airport in New York City to stay there at this terminal building. So that is a perfect example of how these airports and terminal buildings are turning into a destination. I mean, it's not only hotels. Mm-hmm. They're adding museums. They're adding spas. They're adding movie theaters, entertainment centers. I mean, so many aspects to the terminal building that is they're making it a way for people to travel there, making it a destination.
Wow, that's great. That's great. Yes, yeah, so I saw pictures of that, and it kind of reminds me of the Jetsons, just kind of like how the building is laid out, and it's all like bubbly and things, but that's pretty cool. I mean, I definitely makes sense. Now, as far as, let's say, architect, as far as finances are concerned, what can someone expect to make as an architect? You know, just to kind of dive into
a little
bit.
The nitty gritty,
yeah,
right?
let's dive into this a little bit. We don't have to talk specifics, but get into architect. You know, what's the range that someone can make? What type of benefits can someone expect working in this field?
Yeah. Well, that is a real good question. And I've gone through really the different phases in the profession that are able to determine a level of financial success.
Before we start going down this road, so this is your development one is your own company, right? That's your own firm? Okay. Where were you working or how many years of experience did you have before you started out and started up your own architecture firm?
Sure. And you know, it's important to, before I respond to that, it's important to make sure that the people, the audience understand that things are relative. No matter what you go into, you're going to have to prepare. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have to commit. And you're going to have to really envelop yourself with that profession that is going to give you the training so that you can become good at what you want to do. I personally don't believe there are any shortcuts. If you want to be a doctor, if you want to be a CPA, an attorney, an architect, an engineer, anybody in a professional type of field, you're going to have to prepare. So the commitment of time involved is very, very high. But if you're passionate about it, time will not matter.
Yeah.
So with that said, in my case, I got my bachelor's and my master's out of the University of Washington. And that was a process of about 7 years.
Okay.
And at the time, it seemed like lifetime. But then when I look at where I have been since then, it was time very well spent. Not only developing as a professional, as an architect, but also the maturity that came with it, the leadership skills, mm-hmm. the lessons as a human being that came from being at an institution like the University of Washington, I think was a tremendous investment, and it would be for any human being. After that, you're required to do a 3-year internship.
Okay.
Be supervised under a licensed architect for 3 years before I could take my licensing exam. Today, you can start taking your licensing exam as soon as you get out of college.
Okay.
But you will not be given a certificate if you pass everything up until you complete the 3 years of internship. Back then, we couldn't start taking the exams until after the internship was complete.
Okay.
So then 7, 8, 9, 10, that was 10 years right there. I started taking the exam. On average, it takes about 3 years to pass the exam. Back then, it took about 3 years. It's much faster today because everything's computerized. So you can have it really in 6 to 9 months. You can really expedite to become licensed. And then, so that was the process I followed. I worked under another architect as an apprentice.
Okay.
You cannot use the term or phrase, the name architect, architecture, architectural. unless you are a licensed professional.
Okay.
So you're a draftsman, a job captain, a designer, apprentice. That all falls under that. But I look back now, really titles don't mean much to me anymore.
Okay.
When you're a licensed professional, it really does not matter. So in any case, that was 10 years, you know, and then I finally got licensed. I worked for a couple firms through my internship period and a couple of years in after passing my license, I worked for a company here called GPRA, Architects and Engineers, where I was able to get some tremendous valuable experience, get my feet wet. I moved to Cincinnati, Ohio, where I worked for another firm, and I tried to work for this firm that was designing homes. Every architect wants to have a shot at designing homes.
Okay.
And then I came back to California, and I worked for an architect, George Knowles. His firm was Knowles & Associates. At that, this was a gentleman which I admired because he worked and stayed under Frank Lloyd Wright. And
oh, wow.
I felt that there was a lesson that I really could learn from him. And so I worked for him for a little bit over a year, and then I got courted by a developer. And so I went to work for a developer, and I was able to learn that aspect of the development process of real estate, which was very good knowledge. That's what all of this comes down to, is the amount of knowledge, the type of knowledge that you have to be able to pick up and so that you can use that in practice in your profession. So after that, we fell into a recession and jobs were hard to come by. Through that apprentice period, really, it was what I was being compensated was not very much money. It was very difficult at that time. And I think anybody in the apprentice type of situation can understand that everything from attorneys, CPAs, even MDs, they don't make much money.
Yeah. What would the range be for an apprentice, like in today's dollars, let's say?
Now, today, you know, if you are well prepared, you could make anywhere for an apprentice anywhere between $50,000 to $70,000.
Okay,
I think which you can defend yourself pretty well.
Yeah.
In life and be able to live a decent life. And
does that include benefits?
Oh, yes, it does include benefits. And you know, I mean, it depends on the company too. Mm-hmm. Today, compared to when I started to work, there wasn't the knowledge of where to work for. Who to work for there. You could not review them. You could not see what these companies did. The profession was very, very different. I think there was a lot of abuse back then, meaning they shortchanged you quite a bit. There was management styles were very different. It was management by intimidation, not motivation. Here at Development One, quality of life is very, very important. I've been able to apply a lot of the things that I didn't like from my other place that I worked at. That was the value of working for somebody else.
Okay.
Eventually, what I ended up doing is that I ended up quitting my job and I got tired of somebody else being in charge of my destiny, my professional destiny. I think today there's a lot of good employers, much better than back then. It might be a different story, but back then I felt that there was a lot of abuse and they limited you on your potential. Of what you could, not only earning potential, but your professional development.
Okay.
For us, it's very important that our employees develop and grow, that they are passionate about the profession and that they feel that they are part of the team here, that they fill an important role here. And it's important for us that they know it and that they're compensated fairly.
Okay.
I'm always checking to see what profession is paying, and I make sure that they are paid fairly. And also, you know, I give them a bonus. I give them opportunities to earn bonuses here too. Thing that the company is able to benefit out of, they should be compensated for that effort that they put out. I never had a 401k or a defined benefit plan or anything like a profit share. I never had any of that.
Yeah.
So we have that for the employees because it's important that they feel that they are contributors to this operation. In a way, you know, even though they don't have ownership, we want them to feel that they have ownership here in the firm.
Yeah.
Consequently, turnover is very, very low. So back then, it wasn't like that.
Yeah.
That way, I remember, finally, I got laid off from that developer. They gave my job to one of their friends, and I'm so offended by that. I tell that story because they're humbling. They add your grit. They develop your grit, and they develop your character, and they develop you as a good human being to see what is important. So when I started this firm, I had different values, right? Different values that shaped not only me as a human being, but the firm and my employees.
Okay. From an apprentice, like, I guess, what are the stages? Like, well, let's just take development one for an instance. You know, I don't know if you have an apprenticeship over there or you start up, start out at a certain stage and then you just kind of move up along the way. Like, what are those different stages in someone's career?
Sure. We love having people straight out of school come straight over here, and that they've got a path, and we will develop them and we'll help them grow. We want the commitment that they will stay here. So we want to make sure that the investment we're making on them will pay dividends down the road. We're hoping that we do a real good job so that they will develop into managers and they will grow in their different departments, different areas. You know, of course, you got the junior architects and the, you know, apprenticeships and job captains. We encourage them to get licensed.
Okay.
Here they got the option of either becoming a project manager or a design architect. A senior architect, they will dictate and be direct contributors to the design work.
Okay.
The concept always comes from me. I am the one that develops the concept, and they help me develop it. Okay. So they have, and I choose to do the team approach where we are all having critiques and we are able to develop this design. In the end, it's my say because my firm, my stamp and my signature goes in all the drawings. So I got to stand behind that design. I got to make sure that I'm able to sell that design to the clients. That's why ultimately, I have veto power, let's call it.
So now as, let's say, so we talked about an apprentice. So now as a project manager and as a design architect, what's the typical income range for those folks?
Depending on what they bring to the firm, it could be anywhere between, again, the top range of a job cap, $70,000 up to $150,000, you know, depending on what they can contribute to the firm. There are obviously different areas, different sizes of firms, different benefit packages. These benefit packages could range everything from full health care, 401k defined benefit plan, which are retirement plans, and they're profit centers, right? There are also bonus programs, depending on their contribution and the productivity of the firm, what they're able to contribute and help the firm grow. They could make different levels of bonuses. Mm-hmm. Let's just say that a design that was very impactful and gave us a lot of credibility and a lot of, and their effort was met all the deadlines and was within budget. I mean, that needs to be compensated, that dedication, commitment. There's a little things too. The ABCs of going to work. Make sure you're here on time.
That might be important.
Yeah, make sure you're not cutting out early. I mean, I would never say anything, but I know. Everybody knows. A boss knows.
Yeah.
Paying attention. You know, I see them. If you take a look here real quickly, look, my walls are made out of glass. There's no reason.
There's no hiding.
And there's no hiding. I see everything. I see everything. So, and like I said, I don't say anything. I don't reprimand them for leaving early or anything like that. If indeed they are not fully committed, there's something going on wrong.
Yeah.
Or they're distracted. There's something that's just not genuine. What is that? What is that? We got to sit down and be able to figure that out.
Yeah.
Where are their strengths and how it is that we can help them grow?
Yeah.
You know, feel fully committed to their job.
Okay. Now, I find it really interesting. You went out on your own. You started up this architecture firm, right?
Yes.
And you have a love for aviation. So how did you get into aviation with the architecture firm, with your aviation clients like Qantas, like NASA?
Yeah.
What did you do? Because that's pretty impressive.
I love these questions. These are fantastic questions you're making, you know, and they're very relevant. Ironic, I go back to when I did my master's thesis. My master's thesis was the design of a terminal building. I thought, gosh, it would be just totally cool to design a terminal building. Little did I know that is really where my future was in aviation, aerospace type facilities. So I designed that, and that was a stepping stone to the future. I started off out of my garage doing little small remodels, and then knew that my first employer had been successful at doing public sector work. So I started pursuing that, looking for RFPs and respond to RFPs. I went to see one gentleman at the Marine base at 29 Palms, out in the middle of nowhere.
Okay.
And I met with him, and he gave me my first shot at a small project. And I remember my first project being a dog kennel. And so I designed this dog kennel, and it did a nice job. And he gave me five little projects. You know, the dog kennel was one. The other one was a retrofit of a fire station. The other one was retrofit of a fitness center.
Okay.
And it did these little projects, and he was happy with me. And he went on to give me the contract for the next 8 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. He became a very good friend. Eventually, he retired, and I stayed friends with him. And this is one of the big lessons. You never, ever forget those people that help you. I never did. And that man will always stay close to my heart. He passed away just last year, and I had lunch with him one last time.
No.
And I'll never forget that man. So these are moments that, as a professional, you see those people that helped you along the way. He was one of those, I call them angels.
Yeah.
He was one. And so, and like that, I have maybe a handful of them, can count in five fingers, you know, that they helped along the way. And so, you know, from there, I went on, you know, that was a stepping stone to do other work. An RFP came out to do work at Edwards Air Force Base. And this project had been set aside for small businesses.
Mm-hmm.
I was a small business, obviously, and I qualified for it. And I remember I came in third place. But then when they're doing their audit, they found out the other two firms were large firms. They weren't small firms anymore.
Yeah.
So that put me in. And so I had that contract for another, that's what was it, something like six years
yeah.
with Edwards Air Force Base.
Wow.
And then that, I just kept on plugging away. And I've done some exciting things. But back to when I got started, before that contract at 29 Palms, I got an opportunity to do work in Japan. This is one of the great recessions. You know, I've learned from all our recessions, national economic recessions. That's what I meant.
Yeah.
And during one of those, back in the early 90s, I had a friend that worked in Japan. His boss was looking for an American architect. And so, to make a long story short, I was given the opportunity to design four clubhouses in Osaka, Japan.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so I was able to do that work, and that was another stepping stone in the private sector, that in international arenas, that really, really helped me. And so the reason this is relevant with my brand today is because the LA Times and the Orange County Register both did articles on me, because I was one of the few architects, small firms, that was making a little bit of money. And so they were interested in me sharing my story. So then at the end of the interview, they said, well, we want some pictures. What can we do that will be fun and exciting? Because frankly, they have a roll of prints here. It's not very exciting. So I said, I was just starting to take flight lessons at that time. And I was thinking, you know, so, well, you know, we can go to the airport and, you know, have a picture taken in front of my airplane. And architect flies around the state to check on his plane. And he said, oh, we love that. Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that. You know, so we went to Fulton Airport.
Yeah.
And the flight school where I was taking lessons, dress the parts, suspenders.
Yeah.
They took my picture in front of the airplane with a roll of prints. It was printed center spread in the business section.
Uh-huh.
And that was the beginning of the flying architect.
Okay. Which kind of is a good segue. So the next question I was going to ask you is,
yeah.
So how did this all start? Like, how did you decide that you're able to combine your GA flying with your business?
Yeah. So that was the beginning of it. That article, when my CPA saw that, he said at the time, he said, you know, I can write off all your flying from here on out. And so I'm not sure how legit it was back then, but let's say for just discussion purposes, you know, I wasn't making much money anyway. So it was very legit.
Yeah.
And it was the beginning of a career and a passion and a future of combining my passion with my profession.
Mm-hmm.
And today, flying architect, I mean, it's all documented really well. All my brand, my line of work, where all my clients are located, and the way I'm able to use the aircraft to fly to remote sites is certainly something I never imagined I'd be able to do.
Do you fly that long distance, through multiple states, or is it mostly contained locally in these states over here on the West Coast?
No, the short answer is that yes. No, I've flown north of the Arctic Circle.
Oh, wow.
up to through past the Juneau, past Fairbanks,
okay,
last Anchorage, past that. And I've flown to the Bahamas. I've flown to Havana, Cuba. Mm-hmm. I've flown to Central America.
In the Piper?
My Piper Comanche. I've crossed country times.
Yeah,
my aircraft is actually an award-winning aircraft. And I don't know if you can see it from there, but I can bring it over here. My plane got this award, this plaque, as outstanding Piper in his class at Oshkosh.
Really?
And competing against all the other beautiful Comanches that show up for that aircraft. You know, and I'm really proud of this, of my PA-24 260B.
Nice.
So I was representing fiberglass class, you know, so I was able to do really well in that area. I'm real proud of that plane. It's been a project that truly has paid dividends.
Yeah.
Flew into Havana, Cuba. Who can say they've flown to communist territory, right?
Yeah.
Shot an ILS into communist territory. A couple months ago, I flew to China, and not in my Comanche. I rented a plane there.
Okay.
I flew over the Great Wall.
Your
audience can see those videos on my website and also our Facebook on social media.
What's your website address?
Yes, it's theflyingarchitect.net. Go straight into my Flying Architect page right there. The name of the company is Development One, and the website for the entire company is developmentone.net. That's one word, developmentone, O-N-E.net.
Okay, perfect. Now, what advantages do you think I know you've kind of mentioned it a little bit, but just having your own plane, being able to fly to all these different destinations, what advantage does it give you over other firms?
There's quite a few, frankly. The biggest one is that when a client tells you, well, what's that going to cost me? You know, and they say, well, we're not going to be playing for private jets and this and that, whatever. Well, frankly, it's much cheaper to fly in a small aircraft than it is to be driving to a place like, say, Edwards Air Force Base. If you, just a simple math, driving from Orange County to Edwards Air Force Base, it takes 3 hours. So 3 hours each way is at six, right? Let's say four bodies and four architects and engineers in a vehicle, that'd be 24 hours, right?
Mm-hmm.
So pay professional fees on 24 hours each trip just for commute.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to in my aircraft, 30 minutes each way.
Yeah.
30 minutes each way. I mean, what a deal is that? I mean, that's just fantastic to be able to save that amount of time.
Yeah. So really, you're looking at an hour of travel time really in the air back and forth versus 6 hours of travel time on the road.
I'll never forget when NASA came in to interview us for the contract a long time ago. They came in and they weren't saying very much. And I said, I'm sure you didn't come this far not to ask any questions. They said, yeah, we want to know about that airplane of yours. As you can see, don't get me started, right? Somebody's passionate about aviation. But I had a good story that was worth listening to. I shared my story as to how I use the aircraft and this and that.
Mm-hmm.
And so then at the end they said, Jay Bruce, if you can promise us that you will use your aircraft to come out to Edwards Air Force Base, we will give you the contract, and we'll also give you a special landing permit to come land the same runway special you used to land.
Really? Okay.
So to this day, I'm still doing that.
Yeah.
I'm still 17 years now.
They were really impressed that you had your own plane and you were able to travel via plane over there.
Obviously, it's a flight research center, aviation. It was a brand. That was the first attractive
thing. Up their alley.
This architect speaks our language, right? So maybe that cool thing that let's see why it works. But the real, let's call it the litmus test, really was that there was this one day that we were the first ones to arrive. We got there early for early meetings, and we were there all day long talking master planning.
Mm-hmm.
And this master planning, people came from Washington, D.C., and, you know, from all over the place. We had a lot to discuss. At the end of the day, you know, everybody left. And we're packing up our stuff and walking down the hallway of the Flight Research Center. We're walking down the hallway on our way to our airplane. It's nighttime.
Yeah.
My boss, you know, great man there, the head of facilities, he's like walking down the hall the other way. He's the only one left and us. He's walking in my direction. And so he's going like this. And I said, everything okay? He says, yes. This is awesome. What was awesome? You guys are still here. And he said, you know, I got something to admit to you guys. You know, I got to share something. This is, he said, this is a great story. It says, your predecessors right here, we really had a really hard time with them because they would come over, they would arrive here around 10 o'clock, they would mingle for about an hour, 10 to 11, 11 o'clock, they'd go to lunch, they want to schmooze you, 12 o'clock, they get to work, 1 to 2, they do a little bit of work, and it's like, oh my gosh, I got to go, I got to beat traffic. They were only here for 2 hours and never saw them again.
Yeah.
You guys are always here. Yeah, we're always there. For us, it's a half hour commute.
Yeah.
For a lot of people, it takes much longer to get to work from home than it takes us to get to Edwards Air Force Base. You know?
Oh, yeah. And you fly out of John Wayne, I'm assuming, or Fullerton? Fullerton. Okay. Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
That's impressive. I mean, I can imagine that's a huge leg up as far as, you know, just productivity, you know, just being able to be productive with your clients, you know, be able to be productive with the work that you do, you know, things like that. So now, I'm sure a lot of listeners are probably wondering and have probably thought about this in the past, you know, for their own sake, is aircraft ownership. So you own the Piper over there. If you don't mind sharing, once again, you don't have to be specific. How much does it cost? I mean, obviously it ranges, but so how much did it cost for that aircraft? And, you know, what's maintenance like? And do things break down often? What is it like to hangar it? You know, how much does that cost? Yeah, like what is it like to own a plane?
Yeah, that's another one of the other misconceptions that people have. You know, they think that ownership of an aircraft has got to cost a fortune.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah.
Frankly, a lot of airplanes are much cheaper than some of the cars that we see out on the road. The used aircraft market is very abundant with great aircraft. I think that as long as the aircraft is maintained well, frankly, an aircraft can fly forever.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't know my Piper Command is a vintage, award-winning vintage aircraft, 1966, a plane that was ahead of its time. It's a plane that's very well equipped, has equipment as nice as a jetliner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some things it doesn't have, like de-icing and so forth, So, but I don't need that right now. But it is very well equipped. An aircraft that's very, very well equipped. You can get a used aircraft anywhere from $25,000 to the sky's the limit if you want something real modern and very well equipped.
Like a Gulfstream or something.
Well, it falls in the jet area, but a jet type of aircraft, right? But we're talking general aviation type aircraft right now, piston aircraft. You know, we're talking Cessnas, Pipers, Bonanzas, Cirruses, Trinidads. I mean, there's so many different types of aircraft available there, that fantastic aircraft that are in the used market and that can be purchased at a real, real bargain. And when it comes to maintenance, you have an annual maintenance that may range. There's different ways to do it. There's mechanics that are more expensive. There are others that are less. Some people like to tinker with their planes so they can do their own maintenance with the supervision of another mechanic. So there's different ways to maintain the aircraft, but I'd say anywhere between $1,000 to $5,000, depending on who does the maintenance. Your hangar could be as low as $150 to $500, depending on the size, the location, what airport. Here we have a lot of, you know, we got John Wayne, which the hangars are very expensive. Then we have Chino Airport, which and Corona Airport, that the hangars are very, very cheap there. I'd say Fullerton Airport is, to me, it's the best deal around, not only because the hangars are very well priced, but because that airport has instrument landing systems.
Okay.
You know, they got a tower. It's got all the facilities like fuel and mechanics, oxygen. It's the only general aviation airport in Orange County. And the only other airport in Orange County is John Wayne Airport, but that's really considered a commercial airport.
Okay.
You know, so that should give you an idea as to what people are looking at. It's more reasonable than what people think.
Yeah.
You know, when I got an aircraft, it was like I had to pinch myself. That was kind of like getting my pilot's license. I didn't think I could afford it.
Yeah.
You know, but it's a mental thing that people don't know.
Yeah.
But it is one of the most fantastic things. Again, we go back to one thing. What's your mission?
Mm-hmm.
What is your mission? I mean, my mission, again, is to use my aircraft for my profession and for philanthropic purposes. Those are the two reasons I have it. People need to have that mission. They buy an airplane, it's going to sit. They don't have a mission. It's going to sit there forever.
Yeah.
To go fly around and buy a $100 hamburger, it's a waste of money. They got to have a mission.
Yeah, definitely. Now, what are your, let's talk about that plane a little bit more. So what are your favorite things about the plane then specifically?
Yeah.
What are your least favorite things, I guess? You know, so we'll talk about both.
Let's start with the things that I love about this. When I looked at aircraft, you know, again, talking about the mission, I wanted to figure out what my mission was going to be. And I was really thinking ahead of time, and I really didn't think, I thought I was a few years away. I wanted to make sure that I was able to go faraway places. This aircraft would be going to be fuel efficient, that I could afford it, that it wouldn't break the bank, so to speak, that I could be proud of this airplane. So the Piper Comanche met all of this criteria. It was fast. Mm-hmm. It was very fuel efficient.
What is it cruise at, by the way, the Comanche?
My Comanche cruises at 170 knots.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, almost 200 miles per hour.
Yeah.
So 170 knots, it's a very, very fast airplane. This plane had great legs, great range, great payload capacity, great fuel efficiency, and great looks. Just a very good looking airplane. And so I'm going to tell you, I fly into airports and people walk over and they want to see it. It's, oh my gosh, most beautiful Comanche I've ever seen. Of course, I feel proud of it, real proud of this airplane. So there were all of those things. You know, with time, I equipped it with the things that I wanted,
okay,
the instrumentation that I wanted. I got a composite propeller on it, which to me is a work of art. Everybody teases me because I always see it as a work of art. Doing that propeller is a...
Well, you're an architect, it's in your nature.
You know, painted it the way I wanted it, in color purple, of course.
So let's see a picture of that.
With these three friends, we flew from... We're on our way back from Havana, Cuba. Nice. This stop made in Texas to refuel.
Nice.
Yeah. So it's like you say, you can see it's purple on white. At the time, that really was, and my mission continues to evolve. It will come a time where I may need something different, some things that my plane doesn't have. It doesn't have de-icing.
Okay.
It's not a pressurized plane. It doesn't have air conditioning.
Yeah.
It's not a turbo. Those things would be nice to have. But that's like next step. I don't need that. But that would be the next step. You know, you always want to keep on evolving. You know, the time I get an aircraft that has those features.
What exactly are the next steps? So what are the next steps for you? What are the next steps for, you know, let's say the aircraft and your firm?
So the next step for the firm, and you know, everything is connected. The next steps is that we're actually opening up an office in the Northwest in the Seattle area. And we're going to be pursuing a work up in the Northwest. The connection makes sense. I go a lot, still connected with my alma mater. Economy continues to boom up there, and it's going to continue for immediate and long range. And so it makes sense for us to open up an office over there. I'm licensed in the state of Washington, so that's the next step professionally here. They're also looking at acquisition, acquiring another firm in another area to be able to spread our knowledge, bring in talent, and perhaps another region in the area.
Okay.
With just that little bit that we have shared with you right there, I think that the need for another aircraft with different equipment that can meet that other mission would make sense.
That's exciting. I guess, you have two aircraft, or are you looking to sell one and purchase another one, or will you just be flying two and just getting some architect's license?
Yeah, I'm not quite there yet, but right for the immediate future, I think to find the right platform, the right aircraft, and see how that works out, and then follow. If indeed the Comanche has completed its mission, then we can pass it on or sell it to somebody else whose aircraft meets its mission. I think that would be a great platform to have. It's certainly been babied quite nicely. Yeah. Anybody that owns this airplane is going to end up with a real, real nice plane.
Nice.
I'm not sure I can let go of that. We'll see.
You want to share what plane you're looking at next? Perhaps, or possibly, I guess?
Yeah, I think there's different aircraft that could meet the next step or the next mission. I think Cirrus SR-22 turbo possibly could meet the mission that has de-icing. That could be a natural next step. So that to the next step after that could be the Vision Jet.
Okay.
Vision Jet, certainly Cirrus Vision Jet could be the next step after the Cirrus.
Mm-hmm.
It could be in the area of Bonanza, perhaps. That could be another area. I think the Cirrus allows you the growth of jumping into the Vision Jet. Anything above that, again, we're talking being able to measure the finances. The cost is very, very important.
You have to justify it, right?
We got to justify. We got to also make sure that we're passing on the savings to our clients. We want to make sure the clients still understand that we're being prudent, that we're using this vehicle as something that's going to benefit them as well.
Yeah.
That is important to be able to pass that message on. So those are some ideas as to what that could be. Something turboprop, possibly a Pilatus, could be a next step over. Those, though, are very consuming a lot of fuel. Our missions are 2-3-man missions. A Pilatus would be overkill.
Yeah. Okay. Now, let's see. You mentioned that you use your plane for philanthropic purposes. Can you just talk? You want to share with us a little bit about that?
Belong to an organization called the Flying Doctors of Mercy. I also belong to an organization called the Flying Samaritans. I've flown with them for many, many years. When I flew with the Flying Doctors of Mercy for the stretch of 8 years and became the president for a couple terms, a pilot coordinator as well for the Flying Samaritans. And these organizations are organizations that fly deep into remote areas in Mexico.
Okay.
Once a month, and we fly on a Friday. We do medical treatments for those that don't have any medical care and Fridays on Saturday, and then we fly back on Sunday.
Okay.
Because I'm bilingual, I not only serve as a pilot, but I also serve as an interpreter in these missions. We take anywhere between 15 to 25 airplanes loaded with doctors and medical supplies. And we do everything from cleft palates to laser cataract surgeries to cleft palates. I mentioned that, heart surgeries, just primary care. So we do a spectrum of healthcare that certainly has been very beneficial to them. The strangers that don't have any means, the Flying Samaritans, we do that as well with them.
Mm-hmm.
Those trips are, we get up really, really early on a Saturday morning. We arrive in a town in Baja. And we are there no later than 10. We start to work at 10 o'clock. We go until 5 o'clock.
Okay.
And then we stay there afterwards, Ciudad Obregón or one of the beach resorts, and then we come back on Sunday.
Okay.
These are trips that have been very rewarding for me for many, many years. To give a stranger health care is some reward that truly is eternal. Without any consideration of heritage, religious privilege, preference, excuse me, any conditions in there. It's just for the sole purpose of making a difference in another human being.
Yeah.
The other philanthropic things that I do is occasionally I will donate flights. I'm an honorary member of the 99's Women's Air Corps.
Oh, wow. Okay. An honorary
member because I've helped them in their fundraisers as well. Once a year during Fulton Airport Day, we provide ride airplane rides.
Mm-hmm.
The money that comes from those airplane rides goes directly to the scholarship program for the 99s.
Oh, wow. So, that's impressive. Yeah,
the firm does this as a service program, as a team building service program to be of service to an organization. The 99s is our choice of organization to be able to provide what those awesome women do. Big fan, truly admirable women. Pilots are tremendous, smart, intelligent, beautiful women that really are making a huge difference in our aviation community.
Wow.
Yeah. So that is another thing we do. Another one is pilots and paws. Every now and then I will do a flight to be able to transport pets to different regions so that the pets can be adopted.
Okay.
So there's many, many opportunities for philanthropic opportunities.
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely. For those listeners, and if they want to get involved with some of these organizations, what is the best way?
Yes. Flying Doctors of Mercy, LigaInternational.org.
Okay.
You can look at Google that, LigaInternational.org. The Flying Samaritans is FlyingSamaritans.org. Again, these are fantastic organizations. Everybody pays their way to go down there. It's addicting to be able to make a difference in somebody else's life. If you're going to have an addiction, that's the best one to have. And everybody should come visit us at Airport Day and get a free ride from the Flying Architect.
There you go. So Fullerton Airport Day, right?
Yes.
When is that usually?
I believe it's in May.
May.
It is in May. Yes. Yeah, so look out for it annually and in May, and look at the Fulton Airport website for that.
Okay. You know, I might head out there. I fly out of Chino, and so, I mean, it's we're fairly close to Fullerton, too.
Oh, yeah.
So I might hit you up for that ride over there.
You got it.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for spending time with me. Just to wrap up, got a few fun questions for you. So what is your favorite aircraft? So, you know, could be military, could be non-military, jets, airliners, you know, whatever it is. What is your one favorite aircraft?
It's a Piper Canadian.
I was just going to say that besides the Piper Comanche, because we already know that that's a great air.
So many aircraft. I think that one of the aircraft that I always dreamed about that really was an inspiration for me was the X-15. The okay. X-15 was really the first jet aircraft that was really a spaceship, our first spaceship that really went into experienced weightlessness for the very first time. And you could get astronaut wings to fly that aircraft. Neil Armstrong flew it. I mean, all top pilots flew it back in the day. Of course, it doesn't fly anymore, but that was an airplane that was an inspiration to many people.
Okay, nice, nice. That's a great choice. Now, do you have a interesting or funny aviation story that you like to share with us?
Well, I think that truly, there's so many stories. And for those that know me, I am a really a man of multiple stories. I think that really, in all seriousness, I can joke around a lot, but the story that I like to really share is primarily has to do with my father. My father, as I mentioned earlier, was a war hero. He did not get to fly with me up until right before he died. He would make silly jokes. You know, I'd already been a pilot for many, many years. And, you know, I finally realized that probably he was afraid of flying. Mm-hmm. And this was about a year before he died. He was out to visit. And he says, "Jay Bruce, I'm ready to come fly with you." I said, "No, well, Dad, don't worry about it. You know, I know it's not your thing. You know, don't worry about it. It's okay." He says, "No, I really want to do it. I really want to fly with you." And I think he knew that the end was coming. So he did not want to die not knowing that he didn't fly with his son.
Wow.
So I took him to the airport, and we flew around, and I showed him around the basin of the Los Angeles, Orange County area. Mm-hmm. And it was a spectacular day. And then we came in, we landed, and he said, "Is that it?" And I said, "What were you expecting, Dad?" "So I got a story to tell you. It's a sad story," he said. "Many years ago, I flew with somebody. I was going to go see a site." He was in retail, so they were going to see this one store in a remote area. And they said that this guy scared the daylights out of him. And he did these maneuvers that just really, my dad decided he was never, ever going to fly.
Yeah.
He scared the daylights out of him. And he said, "Ever since, I've been scared. Didn't want another day to go by without me flying with my own son." And so Dad missed out this awesome part of flying. And I shared with him that as professionals, they teach us to take people on rides so that they can love aviation, not scare them. You want them to fly again, because truly to see this world from that perspective above ground, there's nothing like it. People have described aviation as if it was love at first sight. Some people have said, "I did not know what love was until I learned how to fly." So to me, that is just the most descriptive way to explain
what aviation is. Oh, for sure.
And so take that away by scaring somebody in flight is a disservice to everyone. Mm-hmm. So I explained that to Dad, and the last 5 years of my dad were the best years of our relationship together. And I think it was because aviation was part of it.
Were you guys able to fly a lot more then after that?
He flew not very much more. Okay. He died of cancer shortly after that. We were able to do some other events, some other things. Like I took him to the Howard Hughes Memorial Trophy Award Banquet. He got a chance to meet Bob Hoover, which is the greatest pilot that ever lived. And when they met, Bob Hoover was always also a Korean War combat veteran. It was almost like they were best friends. And what a way to really explain and introduce my dad to aviation, but introducing him to such a great man.
Yeah.
You know, Bob Hoover was everybody's great friend. I considered him my best friend. But he's every pilot's best friend. He really was.
Yeah.
It was sad to see him pass, but it was great for my dad to get to meet him.
Oh, yeah.
So dad was able to see some of these other things. He got to fly in my own plane. He flew in the Comanche. So all in all, dad left knowing how wonderful aviation was and be able to change that paradigm in him of that fear that he had instilled in him by another unfortunate negligent.
Yeah. Yeah. That's such a great story. That's so true though. You want people to be able to enjoy it and to just see what we see, you know, when we're up there and like be able to experience all that stuff. And I'm glad he was able to do that. So now let's close it up. Let's say someone comes up to you, says, Jay Bruce, you know, what just through all your experience, you know, work and, you know, creating your own company, flying, you know, aviation, all that kind of stuff. What is your one best financial advice that you can give me?
Yeah. The best financial advice is follow your passion. There's nothing else that can substitute or can make you more successful than following your passion. If you follow your passion, you'll never go to work ever again.
Yeah, you'll never work a day in your life, right?
You never will. And that is true. That advice was given to me. I pass that on to everybody. Make sure that no matter what, wherever you work at, if it's your own business or working for somebody else, that you're passionate about it, you will be rewarded abundantly. Believe me.
Nice. Nice. I like that. I love that. So, Jay Bruce, well, thank you for joining me here on the Level Playing Field podcast. And you are truly an inspirational person. You have great stories, great experiences to share. And I'm glad we got to talk to you.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Level Playing Field podcast. Make sure to visit our website, thelevelplainfield.com, where you can subscribe to the show so you'll never miss a single episode. If you found value in this episode, please rate us on iTunes or simply tell a friend about us. Join us again next week for a chance to propel your knowledge to new heights.